funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
From also Shea feeding it in, and good defensive play by Armagh. It's out to Kieran McGeaney, the captain. It's all over.
What a result, Shea. Fantastic result for Armagh. And what a credit to them, the way they applied themselves when everything seemed gone from them.
A fantastic day for Armagh. They have won the All-Ireland.
Some scenes after this one, Conor, you'd have to say the whole pitch covered in orange and white. I think this was when the GAA were trying to keep people back off the field at the full-time whistle, but there was no one keeping the Armagh fans back. They went absolutely crazy, and rightly so. And at the start of McGeaney's speech, he actually had to tell, very sensibly, had to tell all the Armagh fans at the front to push back, push back. He says, don't ruin it now, he said to the crowd. It was kind of mayhem down at the front.
Yeah, but maybe put a bit of dampener in the speech, but I don't think Armagh people cared at that stage, considering that they'd won the All-Ireland for the first time in their history. But I just looked it up there. It was between 1999 was the first year that they implemented the trophy on the pitch presentation. I think Meath definitely won the football. Yeah. And Cork, I think, won the hurling. So that was in place between 99 and 01. But like, you're banking on a county that's absolutely mad for GAA that have just ended this ridiculous famine and beaten the kingdom and like probably the best team in the GAA at the time in dramatic circumstances. So just try and keep those people off the pitch. And at that stage, when I saw it, I was like, do you remember that Croke Park had Plan B that they put it up on the big screen? And I was thinking, was that around that time? But that actually didn't happen till 2009. And, you know, it wouldn't happen, you know, it would never happen today because kind of, I suppose, we're used to that stage. But regardless of the health and safety, I don't think that anyone was going to begrudge all those thousands of Armagh fans, steaming the pitch at the end. They were well entitled to it.
I was talking to Declan Darcy on Monday about missing those pitch invasions, you know, and that kind of was what the GAA was all about, you know, and the fans got in and they were all in front of the trophy presentation. I definitely think it's more sanitized without these. Like, the scenes were incredible. I do agree that it took from McGeaney's speech. He didn't really regain momentum at all after it. Like, his speech was fairly flat because it started with pleading with them to push back. But a big story of this one, obviously, we'll get to analyze it in part two. Armagh were dead and buried at halftime, and Joe Kernan brought his runners up memento. Whatever he got for coming runners up in 1977. And this kind of inspired the team to come out in the second half and, you know, turn the game around. I didn't actually know, Jerk Hannig said it in the commentary, that he'd done the same in the semi-final against Dublin, only he brought his jersey from the 1977 final to do it. Like, I mean, this is taken a little bit from this famous halftime speech, the fact he'd done the same thing in the semi-final for me.
Just a little bit as well. You'd imagine that that's a novelty that only has an impact once. Do you know what I mean? I suppose, considering the circumstances maybe, and considering that, and we'll get to this, considering that Armagh looked out of it, not out of it, they weren't out of it in terms of the score, but like Kerry had, after maybe the opening 10 or 15 minutes, Kerry had absolutely taken over that game, and they looked like they might, there was a danger there Kerry might coast to winning the game in the end. So maybe Kernan was thinking, you know, I have to rely on everything I can here. Maybe I'll just try this trick one more time. I mean, he wasn't going to be pulling it out next year again. But in terms of how, you know, I was just kind of even reading back on Joe Kernan and kind of his kind of meticulous preparation for that year. So while he might have repeated the trick that time, this is something he would have thought long and hard about. I mean, you know, Armagh had a massive backroom team at the time, nutritionists, psychologists and stuff. I didn't realise that they went on a warm weather training camp that year as well, which back then it wouldn't have been as common as it became, say, the mid-2000s and the Celtic Tiger era and stuff like that. So while it was a novelty, and it takes away from me as well that, like, surely you have to save this for the final, you know, that kind of way. But it's definitely something he would have thought long and hard about. But that's it. You can't go any more than two. If he's done it in semi-final and the final, there's no way he can bring it out the next year.
Yeah, it's funny, we beat Armagh before they went on that warm weather training camp. We beat them in a Division 2, they were in Division 2 at the time, semi-final in Longford. And you know who beat us in the final? Kerry. Well, Kerry and Armagh were in the Division 2 semi-finals, which was a weird one. But it was the first year of the qualifiers, and Kerry had been beaten in Munster. And it's like they got their back up then, and they destroyed Wicklow, they destroyed Fermanagh, they destroyed Kildare, they destroyed Galway in the All-Ireland quarter-final, and they destroyed Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final. Like, I mean, they were just on fire. So this is why at half-time, like, watching that live, you're giving Armagh no chance whatsoever, absolutely none. And it was just funny looking at the Gooch, it was his debut year, like the jersey hanging off him and the shorts too big for him. And like Derek Hanning saying, Colm Cooper, the find of the year, known to his friends as Gooch or Gucci.
Gucci. Like, I mean,
or Gucci, like this is the introduction of Gooch. Like, I mean, he looked like he was 12. But like, I think it was, he said in the commentary as well, because Kerry full forward line had scored 660 to date. Now they had been playing Wicklow, Fermanagh, no disrespect, Tommy Lyons, who was very relevant in 2002 because he'd lost, they'd won the Leinster and lost to Armagh by a point. He was asked how he'd handled the Gooch and Mike Frank Russell, who scored 2-11 in the semi-final, and his answer was to shoot them.
Well, what else are you supposed to do with them, I suppose? Yeah, Mike Frank that year, I think, scored 327. I think maybe only Oisín McConville, I think, might have scored more than that year. So he was on fire. And Gooch, that was Gooch's debut year. Something I noticed in, I thought, not that I would ever describe Colm Cooper as selfish. I thought, like, throughout his career, if there was somebody in a better position, he'd always give it off to him. But sometimes in the first half of the final, I thought that he was even maybe too quick to give it off to somebody else rather than maybe take it on himself. And that's despite him scoring 2 points in the first half, I think. But by that stage, you could tell that Kerry's tails were up going into that final, that they'd won games so easily, because the interplay after the first few minutes, the interplay of their forward line was a joy to behold for a few minutes. There was like typical Kerry stuff. They would bounce and ball, perfectly delivered, and as soon as somebody delivered, there was somebody off the shoulder in a position to take a score, take an easy score. Darrow Caneja, I think, had withdrawn a bit. He'd maybe come out.
Here, you're getting into analysis, part two analysis here, are you?
I couldn't help myself here, Willie, but I'll go back to a point I wanted to make, and I'll finish up there. But that going into, you mentioned they're going into that final. The only game that Kerry had lost before then was the Munster final against Cork. That went to a replay, and it came a few days after I think the death of Micheál O'Shea, who would have been brother of Paddy's and father to Dara, Mark and Tomás. So there's obviously circumstances around them losing that game. And then after that, they were completely on fire. So you're dead right. At halftime, considering where Armagh were at, you're thinking, geez, there's only one winner here, and it's definitely not Armagh.
Yeah, definitely. And then they had the penalty miss just before halftime. And to be fair, that was probably justice in a way, because it was a terribly soft penalty. If anything, you'd say McConville made no attempt to play the ball and, you know, just tried to barge it over the line. Incredibly, it was blown up for a penalty. But I suppose Declan O'Keefe kind of put his feet up a little bit. Like, that's, if you're trying to see where the referee kind of saw it as a penalty, O'Keefe's legs were up. But Moynihan got back well and kind of dislodged the ball from McConville slightly. And McConville was just trying to gather it back into his hands. But he wasn't. He was just trying to force it over the line. I didn't think it was in any way a penalty.
It was no penalty. And like, it was a surprise that, like, well, we talked about John Bannon last week. He was the same ref for the 98 final, and that he doesn't give away Antonisi, and he still didn't give away Antonisi in this final. But what happened was, so I think
he was a good ref though, wasn't he? I thought
excellent ref. I thought he did a very good job at this game as well. But Oisín McConville got the hand pass, and he had to jump to get the hand pass. So by the time he landed, he'd been nearly swallowed up by O'Keefe, but not in that. He didn't foul him. Yeah. And what happened then was Seamus Moynihan came back. So there was kind of, they're all squashed together. At this stage, Declan O'Keefe was on the ground and his legs were up in the air, but like, he didn't wrap his legs around McConville around them. What happened was, if anything, Seamus Moynihan, through just sheer momentum, kind of might have pushed him into him a little bit. But you're right, Oisín McConville nearly just tried to carry the ball over the line. If it happened further out the pitch, it should have been a throw ball if Anton. It could even have been a free out to Kerry. Yeah. But there was no way it was a penalty. But like, how about Declan O'Keefe coming nearly out to the 13 to smother the ball?
In fairness, the penalty should have been taken again. Like, I mean, it wasn't a penalty, but look, maybe it was just justice. O'Keefe, he came out way too far. Because in actual fact, that is the go-to spot for a right-footed penalty taker under a lot of pressure. And he struck it fairly well. It's just O'Keefe came out so far, he was able to save it.
Yeah, the angle narrowed. Like, if that had been let go, it would have went into the corner. Now, I thought Oisin McConville maybe didn't kick it maybe as hard as he could, but it was a decent strike. If anything, like in soccer parlance, it was a nice height for the keeper. But like back then, sure, it was hard enough to score a penalty from the 14, because keepers were able to, they didn't have to guess before the kick was taken as they do now. Yeah. You know what I mean? So like, and he'd almost come out to the edge of the small parallelogram. So unless Oisin McConville had absolutely stuck it in the top corner, there was no chance it was going in. But I had less sympathy for Oisin McConville under the circumstances, because there's no way it should have been a penalty in the first place.
Yeah, and his reaction was telling as well. He put his head in his hands. Like, you know, usually the sports psychologists say, shrug it off and don't pretend that you're disappointed. I always struggled with that. It's very difficult, but you could clearly see him to the left of the camera putting his head in his hands, you know, showing his kind of devastation at missing it, because Armagh didn't have good record of scoring penalties in finals. They'd missed 3 penalties in 4 All-Ireland finals in the past. So yeah, Armagh looked in big trouble at halftime. And then cue Pat Spillane. Now, we got to hear all this from Pat Spillane because RT were trying to fill time because Armagh were so late back out in the second half.
That's right,
so the,
yeah.
So the analysis at halftime was cut. But we got to hear this again because obviously they were chatting away as Kerry. And I think this had an impact. But again, we'll talk about that in part two. But Spillane says, Francie Bellew, Francie marked Mike Frank Russell. Now, he was taken to the cleaners. But, like, you know, again, you'd be very difficult with the movement and the supply of ball. Francie Bellew is a very ordinary club footballer. I swear to God, my mother would be faster than most of those 3 fellas in there. And she's a bit of arthritis in the knee. He's talking about the Armagh full backline. So, like, I mean, that's Spillane being Spillane. But at the same time, none of the 3 of them would have been blessed with pace. Like, I mean, Francie was a fullback. Justin McNulty wouldn't have been fast. And Enda was their best man marker, but not lightning speed either. And was getting, you know, their best man marker was getting kind of roasted as well. So, like, the hindsight, you can look back and laugh at Spillane. But it wasn't as outlandish at the time. It was, I suppose it was humorous more than, geez, he's got that arse
with. It's probably typical of Pat Spillane is that there's the nugget of a good point in there, but it's dressed up in language that obviously it's quotable how long, I mean, nearly 20 years on, to that kind of way. And like the nugget of his analysis there is lost because of what he said about, you know, his mother being faster than Francie Bellew and she's a bit of arthritis in the knee. But like that's exactly it. I mean, it would have been like you would have wanted to be really on top of your game to be getting the better of that Kerry forward line in the first half. And we might get to it as well, but we'll probably get to this eventually. But I don't know, like Kieran McGeaney's position, maybe there could have been a bit more protection for the full back line in that first half, considering that the change that Mike Frank and the Gooch were getting out of Enda McNulty and Francie Bellew. But that probably wasn't helped either by Daryl Kanaja making things difficult by wandering out the pitch a bit and kind of winning ball out there as well.
You're gone into analysis again. You can't help yourself. I think we should start with part two here.
We'll just have to.
You're just bursting to get this analysis out of yourself.
It was such a good game.
It was a very good game. The second half was very low quality. Again, you're sucking me into it now as well, right? But I thought I was reading this. It was very funny. So after every All-Ireland final back then, there was a goal charity match the following Wednesday. I don't know why they did away with this. This doesn't happen anymore, I don't think. And at halftime, Pat Spillane's mother made an appearance, and it was a pantomime version of Mrs. Spillane. And she lined up against each of the defenders for a race, and the players let her win. So it sounded like at least they're taking a bit of crack out of it.
Well, they need to bring back the goal kind of game alone. If it's purely if one of the players' mothers is going to turn up and do a race with the defenders at halftime. So I don't know why. I think it's as recently as 2013, 2014 that goal charity match used to take place. Because I remember Shane O'Donnell, after he scored a hat-trick for Clare, was mobbed in the charity game that they had a few days afterwards. But it was always kind of a nice touch afterwards. So I'm not sure why. There's probably so many demands on All-Ireland winners that they have to stop it these days. But it was always a nice touch. So it's a shame that they don't do it anymore, really.
It is a shame, yeah, and a very nice touch for the fans as well to get to see the players that won the All-Ireland only a few days previous. So it's a very good idea. But I'll leave it there, Conor, because Ronan Clark joins us on the line now. Ronan, we're talking about the goal challenge game where Pat Spillane's mother made an appearance at halftime. Do you remember much about that?
So, you know, Pat's, you know, he's a very opinionated person, like, but I think the boys don't talk about good humour. And you know, I fancy got a touch, but Betty Taney is run faster than her anyway, so that was a big thing.
So did she race Francie at halftime? Was that it?
No, but I think Betty came out of that there and raced there, like, you know, as you recall anyway.
So I mean, you know, it's funny what Spillan said now, because you went on to win it. But like, the reality was, at halftime, you were in big trouble. Now, we were saying on the show your full back line was getting clean, but it's because they were getting the supply of ball going in to good forwards, you know, was just so good. Nobody would be envious of the job they had.
Like, you have to look at it this way. Like you said, had no protection in the back line at that Thursday. It's like, but we still had the confidence that if they tightened up their ship up, like, you know, we had a chance. And thankfully it paid off at the end.
Yeah.
But as you said, like, any team playing good ball in the forward line, and you know you're forward yourself, like, and it's food and drink for them all day, like, you know, if there's good ball coming in, like, and that's what happened. But the club down and up there, and we came out the other side as winners, didn't we?
Yeah, you definitely did. So Joe Kernan showing you the medals at halftime is kind of one of the big talking points coming out of it. But like, the transformation of McGeaney and McGrain, I suppose, in the second half, did they say anything at halftime, or, you know, how did they transform their games?
I'll tell you, it was a bit more relaxed than people think. Like, you know, yes, Joe done that piece, but like, you have to, like, Kieran and Paul are true leaders, like, and they stepped up to the plate, and it's in their nature to do so, like, you know, and they never shirked any responsibility, and they just said, like, you know, we haven't really played in the first half here, and we just need to go out here and try to get back into the game, and if we do the simple things right, we'll do that there.
Yeah, it was your debut season, and you've never played in an All-Ireland final before, and you're marking Seamus Moynihan. It didn't seem to faze you too much.
Oh, yeah, a lot of respect for Moynihan, you know, Seamus, and not really fazed me anyway. Like, there's no point going out thinking about the opposition or who you're marking. Like, you know, Joe or some of the players will give you a couple of pointers. Like, but you just have to go out and play your game, and just hopefully the occasion doesn't faze you. Like.
Yeah, no, it definitely didn't seem to faze you, because you didn't start on the team that year. Tony McEntee got injured in an early game in the Ulster Championship, and you got in then.
Yes, yeah. Well, Tony got injured against Tyrone in the first game. He hurt his ankle, and I came on as a substitute after, I think it was about 10-15 minutes into the game, and never looked back. Like, you know, you just have to grab the chance, and thankfully I did.
Yeah, it suited you well, though. Like, I mean, the tactics, because we were thinking in the final you overdid them a little bit. Like, I mean, the long diagonal balls onto the top of the D, they worked early on, but then the good diagonal balls kind of dried up, and it just seemed to be, you know, not kicked in without as enough purpose.
If you look back and watch it, like, we're getting a bit of dry in the start of the first half, and then the start of filtering back a bit carried it. And after that there, like, you know, seeing me and Stevie and Damon seemed to come, like, deeper around the D area, try and get the ball, you know. So yeah, we lost all shape. So, but Joe just says, persist with it. Like, you know, it's been working for all year, us. And Paul, too, said this, like, you know, as you said there before, if good ball's coming in, you know, no defence is going to mark it. And thankfully that did in the second half when the game started opening up for us.
Yeah, you nearly killed Stevie in the second half.
Yeah, he
won't
let me let that down anyway.
You're lucky he was able to compose himself and get the winner with the hit he took. Well, that was his. He ran across you, I suppose. That's your response to him.
Oh, definitely, yes. It was my boy coming from behind, like, and he's in front, and I called for it. He says it didn't, like, but yeah, we got over it anyway.
Come here. You had a brilliant relationship with Stevie, though. Like, in general, over the course of your whole careers, you soldiered together for a lot more years after that. And, like, you know, when the two of you were at your best, with those good balls coming in and you knocking a few down to Stevie and him buzzing around, like, you know, you just developed a brilliant understanding with each other.
Oh, Stevie's exceptional talent. Like, you know, when he make any player, you know, good around him, he does things with the ball that I couldn't believe him in training sessions, you know. But the likes of Damer there too, like, and Ashin, phenomenal players too, like, you know, and it just made things, they've done the simple things well, and that made them stand out there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Marison, actually, he got two really important scores in the game, the one before half time and one straight after it.
you had the leader stepping up the plate, and he done that there for us there that day too. Like,
yeah,
you know, even the run for the goal in the second half, like, you know.
Yeah, no, it was. It was very. Come here. Would it be fair to say Armagh didn't play that well even in the final and ended up winning it?
I think in fairness, like, you know, I don't know where, which way it's going to go. Like, you know, I thought we were very nervous at the start. Like, but we weren't very nervous at the start. It was just about 15 minutes in, we started getting nervous for some strange reason, and we tried to go under, you know, our individual cells. Like, you know, we tried to withdraw into ourselves and try to do it ourselves. But half time couldn't came at a better time for us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we got in and regrouped again, and thankfully, like, you know, a couple of words at half time is, you know, everybody knows, like, and come out and done it in the second half now.
You did. Come here, you were seen as a very serious team back then. Were you aware of that perception of you?
No, not really, because, because inside the camp it was great crack. Like, you know, you had the Olympic balls there, you had Benny, Benny would be telling jokes before you even go in when you're in the tunnel, you know, before you go out for a game, you know, and that's the way Benny, you know, like, break the ice, or, you know, his nervous energy, whatever, like, but it was great crack, like, you know, great crack was about the place.
Maybe it was because McGeaney was kind of, you know, your talisman, and he's an intense sort of character that, you know, the team was kind of seen, you know, in his model.
Yeah, but Geezer's a good lad, and good out crack, like, but as everybody knows, like, you know, he's the ultimate professional.
Yeah.
And he's a winner, and he wants to win, like, and he wants players around him to drive on, like, and people probably see that, their perception of him, like, but, and off-site and training and all that there, like, Geezer's just the same as anybody else, like, enjoys the crack and, you know, the banter.
Yeah, no, I've definitely met him away from football, and he definitely is. You were the first team to take the strength and conditioning seriously, because I remember when I started playing in around 98, 99, we did some weights, but we did them for 6 weeks in the winter and then forgot about them. So it was like wasting our time. But I think you were the first to really embrace it and continue it throughout the season.
Ah, yes. Like, we had John McCluskey in there, and the first thing he did was all individual weight programs, and you had to maintain your whole strength all through the whole way through the season, which everybody's doing it. It pays dividends at the end. Like, you know, I believe that I got stronger over the season as the season went along. Like, but and everybody's doing it now. Like, you know, it's just he set up his own periodization model, which we adhered to. Of course, like, you know, it worked well for us.
Yeah, but that wasn't the norm back then, though.
No, it wasn't. Like, no, but like, we just tried. Like, it's war force meeting, we just tried everything to try and get that there extra inch, you know, on teams. Like, you know, and that there one was really, you know, the big one for us, like, you know, trying to get, you know, stronger and faster. Which John, he's been out the programs, and we had to adhere to him the whole way through the season. And, you know, you'd be getting tested, and, you know, if you're falling behind your scores, or, you know, or you're not moving up the ladder, like, you know, we'd be asking questions. Like,
right, you know. So, like, yeah, exactly. It's what teams are used to now, but this is 2002 we're talking about, you know. So
I know.
I think it was 2006 before we started doing weights properly in Laois with Liam Kearns. Mick O'Dwyer didn't bother with them at all. So, like, you were definitely got the jump on other counties with stuff like that. Come here, you started struggling with injuries then. Like, I mean, you did your cruciate, you came back from that, you had an Achilles injury, finished your career. There was a bit of stop-start about things then.
I struggled for form then. Played 04 and 05, but done the cruciate, come back after 6 months of the cruciate, like, you know, and started playing again with the club. The way I look at it, injuries is part of the game. Like, you know, unfortunately, I got a few, you know, that, you know, from near, like, especially the Achilles, like, you know, it finished me at the end of the day when I ruptured one, and then I went back and rehabbed up, and then the following year I ruptured the other one. Like, and I remember just laying in the hospital bed, and the doc came in, goes, "You've ruptured your Achilles," and says, "I know that there, I've done the album." He couldn't believe it. And I just remember my mother standing over me and says, "That's it. That's it. You're not going back." Like, but I did go back, and I started playing playing, getting a bit of form back for the club again. And but then the last year, 2 years, I don't even remember now. I thought we got the injury when playing a club game. I came back from the honeymoon and then hit the goalpost stick, you know, and that was the end of that there. So
yeah, well, that was 2015. I'm going to get that in a minute. But you came back from the cruise ship. you came back from the cruise ship in 2005, and you won an All-Star in 2006, and you won an All-Star in 2008. Armagh won Ulsters in both those years. Now, didn't feature, you know, in the All-Ireland series, but the Ulster wins were enough to get you two All-Stars. That must have been satisfying to be able to come back and you know, win two All-Stars after an injury like that.
Yeah, like it's a bonus, like, but as I always tell my coach, like, you know, it's not the individual, you know, wins awards, it's teams around you, and that's, it's that, yes, of course, it's a bonus for myself, like, you know, and you accept them, of grateful from the heart and all that there, like, but and saying that there, it's the teams that you're playing in that make you, you know, drive yourself on, and as I said, like, you know, it depends with the likes of Stevie and Aaron Kieran, Kieran Cleaver and all them boys, like, you know, they make things easy for you, and unfortunately I just got the awards of, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, Mir, I want to talk to you about then the incident in the county, it was a county quarter final in 2015, and you came home from your honeymoon, you split your honeymoon in two and came home to play this match, and you ended up in a coma for 5 days.
Yes. yes. Yes, I just remember honeymoon to Malta, and the quarter final was fixed in, so I had negotiated with the wife. And she says, right, we'll go home then, and then we'll fly to Rome on the Sunday. But unfortunately, we didn't get to Rome, and I'm still paying for it. And I was like, yeah.
Come here. But the strange thing about this is that you collided with the goalpost and the goalkeeper, and you got back up. And you finished out the game, did you?
I finished out the game, yes. And then I started feeling very unwell, you know, after the game. And I said, I wasn't driving, so I decided to walk home. And next minute, I just remember I was walking down the street, in the main street there, and I started being sick. And then I felt, you know, I was going to faint. So I sat down, but luckily enough, I had the phone in my hand, before the brother, and he got me just in time. And then my father drove me into the hospital then, where then they put me in an induced coma for 5 days.
Jesus. And what was it? What was the problem in the end? Swelling on your brain, or?
Yeah. And then, like, I developed epilepsy out of it then, I too, like, so.
Right, geez, horrific. And it obviously took a while for the effects of it to, you know, to hit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's just like that there thing definitely finished me then. Like, I promised that I wouldn't go back on the football field, like, you know. But some days I think, you know, you like yourself, some days, I might be able to do that there still. but I said I wouldn't put the whole family through it again. Like.
Yeah, well, that's who you're thinking of, the people who are worried about you.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than yourself. But you're in good shape. I saw you recently. Remember we did a coaching thing in Mount Mellick. We were late substitutes for Tomás O'Shea, I think, that day. And we
very,
we
very good ones, but
but you're doing your coaching now, like, I mean, you're into that. You're over the Armagh ladies and you've done some club stuff and you're on call the same as myself if anybody's looking for you.
to try and get to as close as possible, that, you know. I know it's not like playing, like, but you just try and get that there buzz, and you try and get the feed off the boys when you're coaching, like, you know, that their energy, like, you know. And it's I love coaching, and it's a big part of me. Like, GA has been part of my life the whole time, like. And you just couldn't walk away from it without doing nothing. So coaching was the main thing now, where, you know, I just get closer, a wee bit closer to the action there.
Yeah.
Instead of going over the white line. Sometimes that is.
Well, yeah. I'd say it's difficult to hold yourself back on the line at times in management.
Oh, it is. Like, but as you said, the boys are watching you in the way you react. Like, you know, so you have to be calm at all times. Like, and sometimes you do, and you know yourself. Like, sometimes you do lose the head a bit. Like, but that's football. Like, that's, you're passionate about it. And, but there's other ways to go about things, put it like that.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, Ronan. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem at all, Colin. Thank you.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them now.
Alright, so Armagh won 12, Kerry 14 points. And like, I mean, this is an incredible... We'll get to the second half in a minute, but I suppose both teams started fairly well. It was funny that straight from the throw-in, Armagh won it, and Toll won the breakdown and stuck in a long diagonal ball to Dermot Marsden. And it's almost like, right, there's Armagh's tactics. And to be fair, they never wavered from that long diagonal ball the whole way through the game.
The first 10 minutes were so frenetic. It's been ages since I saw this game back, and it's just like, whoa, this is a million miles an hour straight away. There was no feeling each other out. There was nothing like that. Seeing what the other team might be up to before kind of deciding what way you're going to play yourself. It was 100 miles an hour. And I think a lot of that was all to those Armagh tactics. I mean, there was no secret at that stage, though. Like, Armagh wanted to let it in and let it in early. And like, while it might... They let it in long. Now, it would be hard to call unsophisticated, because they always tried to make it diagonal, and they were letting the ball into two of the best ball winners in the country at that stage, who had such a telepathic relationship that they knew where the other one was going to be, kind of under the dropping of the ball. But that's it. Like, Armagh looked brilliant for the first 10 minutes, and they were getting loads of change off that tactic. But then, I suppose, after those first 10 minutes, I think Kerry started to settle a little bit. Seamus Moynihan started to come on to, like, maybe get the better of Ronan Clark for the second half of the first half, I would say. Stephen McDonald then went a bit quiet after getting a couple of early points as well. And then you started to see the interplay of the Kerry forwards. But God, there was no, like, the first 10, 15 minutes absolutely flew by.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. It was a great pace to it. But the Armagh diagonal balls, they weren't all diagonal balls, but a lot of them were landing right on the D, right in that semicircle of a D, and Clark's breaking it down. Like, Stevie got a couple of early points. One of them definitely was from Clark breaking it down. And so, look, they made a career out of doing that with each other. So, like, I personally think Armagh overdid those long balls. Like, I mean, it was very one-dimensional, and they got some early joy out of it. But then, like, the midfield battle, Kerry started winning it. And the reason they started winning it was because Armagh were giving everything to Donal Daly. And Donal Daly started playing the game of his life. And he got on top big time. You know, Benny Tierney was avoiding Dara O'Shea and going to Toll. And Daly started roasting Toll. And Kerry were trying to hit Dara. And Paul McGrain was breaking that. And, you know, between when Kerry took over in midfield, like you were saying in part one, they just started playing some incredible football. It was after 20 minutes, it was they were all square. And then Fitzmaurice burst up the field. Mm. I think that put two between them, Fitzmaurice. And then just Kerry took over playing some unbelievable points and lovely quick hands. And, you know, De Gooch's point was the diagonal ball by Owen Brosnan. Mm. And, you know, he turned McNulty inside out. Then Sean O'Sullivan gave a great ball to De Gooch, who laid it off to Mike Frank Russell, you know. And some of the scores from the offloads and the quick hands, it was a joy to watch. It was football played at the very, very pinnacle of what good football in that era was.
Yeah, it was absolutely champagne stuff from Kerry after the first 15, and that was it. The key to it was Donald Daly had, like, that 2002 was Dara O'Shea's year. I mean, probably would have been Footballer of the Year if they'd won that game. But Donald Daly was outstanding in the first half, and probably hadn't been accounted for by Armagh, because, as you said, Benny Tierney's tactics seemed to be keep it away from Dara O'Shea. But they did that without kind of, you know, trying to vary the kickouts in terms of putting them short. It was literally put it to the side that Dara
is not on, yeah.
Which would have been a fairly sophisticated kickout strategy at that time, to be honest. But then after that, yeah, I mean, prompted by the dominance in of Donal Daly. And I actually thought, without winning clean ball, I thought Darragh O'Shea had a very good end to the first half as well. I thought he was very prominent. But that platform that they got allowed them to kind of deliver the ball in that those Kerry forwards absolutely thrived upon. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant stuff. It was like they were just doing a training session down at Fitzgerald Stadium. It was just so, it looked so easy. You had ball bouncing into Gooch, ball bouncing into Mike Frank, Darragh O'Shea was dropping deep. And that was the thing. It was like, as soon as they got the ball, somebody was coming up an angle to either give them an option to give it to them on the burst, or that they could kick the score themselves. I mean, Gooch, that was, you could notice with Gooch straight away that when he got it, he was immediately looking to give it to somebody in a better position. And if there wasn't, then he'd take it on himself. And the only thing, Kerry will look back in that game, and the big regret they will have is not capitalising more on their dominance that they had in those 15 minutes. Because as well as all those scores they got, Owen Brosnan had two goal chances. One of them, I think he tried to give as a hand pass, and then the other, he was through on goal and kind of blazed wide the far side of the post from the direction he was coming in.
Yeah.
So I think, despite all their brilliant football, champagne football, I think Kerry only went in 4 points ahead at halftime. And at that stage, they maybe not out of sight, but they should have had a far bigger lead than that, because it ended up being wiped out to a large degree by Oisin McConnell's goal in the second half.
It should have been, like, I mean, Owen Brosnan destroyed McGeaney in the first half. McGeaney was neither here nor there. He neither marked Owen Brosnan nor protected his full back line, like you mentioned. And, like, you would have sympathy on the Armagh full back line. Nobody can mark these players when they're getting all that ball from midfield up and the half forwards are running off them. Like, you can't mark it. It's just very simple. You can't do it. Nobody can do it. Not the best cornerback in the country can do it. So, like, I mean, it was difficult. And you're right, Brosnan, like, the first one, he passed to Mike Frank Russell way too early. He should have drawn the man better. Like, I mean, he messed that up a little bit. And the other one was all his own doing. And just, there was nothing in that, though, when you saw the... Jesus, it was... And Brosnan scored a point as well from a brilliant Donal Daly blockdown. So, like, I mean, I thought Brosnan was the player of the first half for Kerry.
Yeah, he was outstanding. Like, the sympathy I'd have for the Armagh defence as well would extend to the fact that, like, anyone who's played in a half back line and a full back line that's on a team that's losing midfield, it's the worst place to be, because it's just time after time, there's an attack after attack, there's no respite whatsoever. You're just crying out for somebody to win the ball at midfield and the forwards at the other end to give you a 5 minutes break. And the other thing I'd say is that, like, while obviously Kerry's attack was centred around getting the ball into Mike Frank and Colin Cooper and either getting runners off them or letting them shoot themselves, their half forward line were making a big impact as well. So, like, Owen Brosnan afforded space by Kieran McGeaney, who wasn't marking him or wasn't protecting the full back line, had a massive half, as you said, and could have ended up with 2-2, and I think he only ended up maybe with a point. And I think then, as well as that, Liam Hassett got at least a point, if not two. And Sean O'Sullivan, I think he got one score, but he was doing a lot of damage just running with hard direct running as well. So, like, there was kind of a mixture between, like, that sort of hard running that you had from Hassett, Brosnan and O'Sullivan in the half forward line. And then the kind of the more sophisticated kind of stuff that you were getting from the lads in the full forward line as well. And the interplay between them based on that midfield platform was just fantastic stuff to watch. But that's it. They had Brosnan converted that goal chance, for example, or even the one he kind of made a bit of a mess of with Mike Frank, I think Kerry would have been maybe 7-8 up half time. And considering the dominance they had for the 20 minutes before half time, there wouldn't really have been an argument with that, to be honest.
No, there wouldn't. And, like, I mean, Armagh were kind of staying in touch. Armagh had the wind, amazingly, in the first half, and a brilliant score by Ronan Clark off his left long range, not really worked. A brilliant score from John McEntee, who was actually concussed when he scored it. I think he was moved in full forward for a rest before he had to come off the field. He scored a brilliant long range one as well. And, like, I mean, that was it. But Armagh were getting some great scores, but off more basic football, where Kerry were playing some lovely interplay. And, you know, they were playing well. You wouldn't say Armagh were playing well, you know, at all, but they were getting some nice scores. It was their full forward line probably keeping them in it.
I thought they might have changed their obviously Armagh played that way, and they were, like, as I said, it was no secret even coming into that game that they played that way. But considering that how how it went after the first 10 minutes until just before halftime. I thought they might have tried and mixed things up a little bit. You know, it might necessarily be, maybe somebody carries the ball a bit more before delivering it, because it just seemed to be a case of, as soon as somebody around the Armagh midfield got the ball, it was just launched in. Now, a lot of the time it was launched in diagonally, but they were all contests. There was rarely a ball given into Ronan Clark and Stephen McDonald that they could win easily out in front. They had to battle hard to win it off.
Yeah.
Mike McCarthy and Seamus Moynihan. And I thought Moynihan in particular, for the last 20 minutes of the first half, started to get on top of Ronan Clark. That brilliant point off his left, notwithstanding. But that's it. Like the points that Armagh did get after that initial period were all brilliant scores. So John McEntee off his left from the 45, just after getting concussed. You had Ronan Clark from just around the 45 as well. And Stephen McDonald had kicked a couple early. And actually, just before halftime, Stephen McDonald had a couple of bad misses. I think he tried one off the outside of his boot, and maybe another that kind of went out. I'm not sure that it even go wide. But that's because they were. I'd agree with you. They were a little too reliant on the long ball that went in, and that was probably owed to the fact that they got so much change off it in the first 10 minutes. But then when Kerry started to get on top, then you're probably thinking they need to mix things up a bit here, because Kerry have just taken over. And if they didn't change things, they were in danger of being out of sight at halftime.
Yeah, so Kerry scored 11 points from 15 chances in the first half. And if I was analysing that game at halftime, there's no point in being a hero. From hindsight, you'd be saying this could get very, very messy for Armagh. You'd expect them to win the second half by a minimum of 4 points and push on now and win it. And how they didn't, they came out in the second half, only scored 3 points. Armagh scored 1-5 in the second half, didn't even play well in the second half and still won the game. Armagh left Kerry out for 5 minutes, trying to explain how Kerry, you'd have to say, bottled this final. Like, they weren't up for that fight, and they completely, folded in the second half, you'd have to say. Armagh left Kerry out for 5 minutes, right? Standing around.
Yeah.
I don't know if that had a factor. Kerry started the second half all right. Mike Frank Russell had a really bad wide at the start of the second half, he should have gotten. And then he had another wide after
that. Too bad, yeah.
These things can kind of deflate a team. Liam Hassett had a terrible wide, even worse. Darragh Kinnaird had a wide. Now all that momentum and that kind of, geez, we're on fire, that's starting to, seep out of them now. The sting is going out of them. Whereas if they'd even got two of those, four wides that say, look, we're pushing on, we're staying ahead. But there was also the Armagh improvement. And the two main improvements in players came from probably their two most important players, McGeaney and McGrain. And McGrain had been given a lesson in the first half, and so had McGeaney. And they started the first two kickouts from Armagh. McGeaney won the first one, McGrain won the second one. Then McGeaney dispossessed Owen Brosnan as he was running through with a great tackle. And McGrain dispossessed Darragh O'Shea. This is all early in the second half. Now the McGrain dispossession of Darragh O'Shea finished in Dermot Marsden scoring a point. Now there's three in it. There had been five in it. Now we're in a battle. All these kind of things. Then Armagh changed their cornerbacks. Gooch caught a high ball and they realised, look, Francie better on Gooch in the air, and then the McNulty. Now we're in a 3-point game. Kerry, the life has been sucked out of them a bit. The Armagh big players are starting to play. Now, how good are you, Kerry?
Well, that's it, yeah. And just to put yourself into the mindset of a Kerry player at halftime. So even though they're left waiting for 5 minutes, but they're thinking, right, we're 4 points to the good here. We've beaten Cork by 15 points in the semi-final, I think. They beat Galway by 8 points in the quarter-final. They'd absolutely breezed to the qualifiers. It had been so long since they were even faced any sort of adversity in the game that they'd think, you'd be forgiven for being complacent and thinking, geez, there's every chance that we're going to coast to this by 7-8 points. We have the wind after we oversaw the first 10 minutes. We're well on top here. This could be easy for us. And then I think that complacency set in, to be honest. I mean, the wides that they got were so unlike Kerry. There was just no clinical nature about them at all in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half. They only scored 3 points in the second half in total, but it was their reliable players. It was Mike Frank Russell. It was Darragh Kinnaird that were dropping balls wide. Liam Hassan mightn't be known as a scorer, but he scored in the second half. And Darragh O'Shea, I think, even dropped one short into Benny Tierney. I think that just came before the Oisín McConville goal. So while you're saying there about Armagh's key players making big impacts at the start of the second half, some of Kerry's key players were making mistakes that were really unfamiliar for those sorts of players as well. And when you compare Armagh's path to the final to compare Kerry's path to the final, so Armagh beat Dublin by a point in the semi-final. They just got over Sligo, who really put it up to them in the quarter-final after a replay. They'd already been brought to a replay in Ulster against Tyrone. So they were used to battles that year. So by the time it came to a battle, there was only, by the time Mushy McConville got the goal, you're talking about 15 minutes left. And by that stage, it was too late for Kerry to reverse that the kind of complacent mindset they'd got into. And by that stage, Armagh's key players, Paul McGrain in particular, who I thought had an outstanding second half, and Kieran McGeaney, as you said, who wasn't in the first half but came into the second half, they were starting to be on top. So it was kind of Armagh saying to Kerry, well, what are you made of now? Like, how much metal do you have now? And Kerry were sadly lacking in response. They got their last score, I think, on 54 minutes. So when you say that, like, I don't think it's at all harsh to say that Kerry bottled it, and like it was only a slight improvement in the second half from Armagh in terms of the quality of the performance. You'd have to give it to them in terms of their attitude and how they saw it home. But like, the story of the final, when you look back on it, is probably how Kerry lost it, scoring 3 points at such a nearly unassailable position at halftime.
Yeah, because like I said, Armagh didn't even play well in the second half to win it. Marison had a goal chance. He made a terrible run. Aidan O'Rourke was through. And instead of staying away wide left, Marison ran across kind of towards Aidan O'Rourke and ran towards Mark O'Shea. Like, I mean, it was a really poor effort by Marison, who, you know, got some very important points in the game. We'll talk about him in part two. But on the 53rd minute, Kerry were 14-10 up. So the 4 points was intact. And that's after 18 minutes of the second half. Like I said, Armagh were doing nothing special. Nothing special to win this game. And it looked like, look, Kerry are playing shite in the second half, but they're doing what they have to do. You know, even though Armagh have improved now and they've changed the game into a battle, but there's no doubt they needed a goal. And then the goal came. And the goal, like, I mean, we've all seen this goal 1,000 times. Tomás O'Shea is on Oisín McConville, and he's been doing very, very well on Oisín McConville. Oisín wasn't in the first half at all. And he got caught on the wrong side of McCann, who was on the ground. And McCann offloaded to Oisín. So now Tomás is kind of scrambling to get back on Oisín. And there's an element of desperation about Tomás trying to get back. But there's no goal on here whatsoever. So Oisín sees Dara O'Shea coming for him. And Oisín went around the long side of Dara O'Shea. But just before he got to Dara O'Shea, who probably would have taken man and ball, he throws a loopy ball inside to McGrain. Oh. Right? Yeah. It was by no means. Now Dara O'Shea jumps up in the air and he's completely out of the game. Oisín continues on. And the great thing about this is, from an Armagh point of view, the fact it was a terrible loopy ball, that just kind of, you know, made Tomás O'Shea think that he could actually get to this ball. Whereas Tomás O'Shea gave up then on following Oisín, which he was doing, and he thought, oh, here we go. This is a terrible loopy ball. I'm going to go try and catch this. But who's he up against? Paul McGrain, who gets there just before him, taps it down to Oisín. Tomás hasn't followed him. You know, two Kerry players have been completely taken out of the game, and what a finish. It was an unbelievable finish from Oisín, and we're being honest, he's got a good 45 and a free in the second half. Hadn't been playing well.
Yeah, it was like a series of kind of unfortunate coincidences for Kerry, that goal. Like, as you said, it was not a dangerous situation whatsoever. Not like, as even for, there wasn't a goal on, there wasn't even a point opportunity on. Then Tomás got the wrong side. And this goal was turned into a goal chance because of a hospital pass by Oisín McConville, to be honest. Because that sort of loopy over the top hand pass in a crowded area, that's the worst thing. That's the worst thing you can possibly do. You're potentially not only losing the ball, but getting your teammate hammered in the process, because that's an ideal opportunity for somebody to size somebody up and get their hit in while taking a bit of the ball as well. But what it did was, as you said, it drew Tomás O'Shea, who otherwise would have stuck with Oisín McConville. There was no way he would have contested the ball with Paul McGrain, but because there was the slightest chance that he thought he'd get there, he went in and jumped, leaving Oisín McConville all on his own. Now, that's you've already said, it's not to take away from the finish, because Oisín McConville is coming in nearly on the... He's coming in at a very... an acute enough angle, to be honest. He didn't have enough of an angle, I think, to work to try and go for the far side, but he nearly gave Declan O'Keefe the eyes to pretend that he was going that far side and then stuck it in the near post. And you said, I think that transformed Oisín McConville for a couple of minutes, because he hadn't really been in the game in the first half. And I'd imagine that missing that penalty might have had an impact on his confidence, even though he had he had sports psychologist supreme and ended up in ulti, so maybe he had a word with him at half time. But then after that goal, you could see Oshie McConnell goes up to the hill. I think he had the collar up, he, you know, put his arms up kind of in celebration and stuff. I'm doing it here, but obviously nobody can see me. And then for a couple of minutes after that, he had a big, like, he was more involved, and you could see the confidence had returned. And I'm not sure he was,
but he did brilliantly not long after that, and he pushed Tomás O'Shea and a bad wide. And then not long after, Stevie McDonald put it into goalkeeper's hands. O'Hagan put it into goalkeeper's hands. Like, that goal didn't spark Armagh into any kind of higher quality football. It was still a poor standard second half of a lot of ball being kicked away. And it was more Kerry making a balls of things. Got Moynihan with a terrible long clearance straight to Kieran McGeaney, who put it into Ronan Clark, who drew it up. You know, like, I mean, now the game's a draw and it's in a huge battle. Tony McEntee came on then and he dropped back a lot into the defence. And then you saw McGeaney blocking Dara Kaneda down on the end line. And Armagh had totally shut up shop at the back. They had got on top of midfield, but they weren't, you wouldn't say they were playing well. You know, like, I mean, and if you look at the winner, it was Dara O'Shea with a great run. Now, it was a tight angle, but I've seen Dara O'Shea score from this angle 100 times. He puts it into the goalkeeper's hands. The ball's worked up the field and Aidan O'Rourke sticks in a sensational ball to Stevie McDonald. And the winner came in the 61st minute.
Yeah. 61st
minute. Kerry couldn't tell me with 10 minutes to go in an All-Ireland final, Kerry couldn't get a point. Kerry, like, that is one All-Ireland Kerry will look back on. Whatever about the 05 one, the 08 one, like, that one is one they have to look back on and go, Jesus, that's just not good enough.
Yeah, the other one is 2011 being the other one, I suppose, when there, I think we were 4 points to the good, maybe with 10 minutes to go before Kevin McMahon got the goal for Dublin. So that's another one. But Kerry have a lot, when you look back at it, like, while they've won more All-Irelands than anybody else, Kerry have a lot of cause to regret a lot of All-Ireland. And we're just talking since the turn of the millennium alone. And this is a big one. It's probably lost a little bit because there's more focus on, I think, the All-Irelands against Tyrone and then the Dublin one in 2011 in particular. But that's it. Like, when the goal didn't really prompt Armagh to do anything different. By that stage, they had more of a platform. They were more in the game, so more of a platform in midfield thanks to Paul McGrain. But if anything, what the goal did was just spark a sense of, now they hadn't been great before the goal, but it sparked a sense of panic, I think, amongst Kerry. Like, just looking back in the game, I can't remember, compared to what they were doing in the first half. Now, granted, Armagh had packed the defence a little bit, as you said, with Tony McEntee getting back in there. But there was no real attempt to deliver that kind of ball that they'd been delivering in the first half. A lot of the ball that went in was long and hopeful. And it was aerial contests. Now, while Gooch was well able to kind of battle for himself in the air, you'd still give him in. You know, he'd still prefer kind of a lower delivery of ball that he could kind of run onto. But there was a lot of kind of hopeful, kind of aimless delivery, I thought. And there was.
I can only remember... The running off the shoulder was gone.
Yeah.
All that support play was gone. And Tony O'Keefe made a very interesting comment at halftime when he was interviewed, a Kerry selector. He said, the midfield is absolutely crucial to our game. And if we keep winning ball in midfield, we might go on to win the game. But like, for him, like, for the midfield being so crucial, and it's obviously so crucial, you get a foothold in midfield, your half forward line is further up the field. They're able to, you know, you're able to give better ball in and you're closer to your full forward line then. When you start losing midfield, it has the complete opposite effect. Your half forward line gets sucked into midfield. Now there's a disconnect with your full forward line. You know, there's a knock-on effect of not being able to win primary ball, especially back in those days when kickouts were going straight to midfield.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And just to say that, like I mentioned there a while ago about the impact that Kerry forwards had in the first half. And then in the second half, I think Sean O'Sullivan was taken off. Owen Brosnan, who, as you said, was probably the player of the half in the first half, wasn't really in it in the second half at all, bar the only real clear chance that I can remember, the best chance that Kerry had to equalise after Stephen McDonald's score was... How Owen Brosnan found this amount of space, I don't know, but I think Dara O'Shea picked him out with a pass and he tried to float one over kind of...
It was a bad miss.
It was a bad miss, but then Liam Hassett was taken off as well, and by that stage, Mike Frank and Colin Cooper had been bottled up as well. So it's just the transformation between... And it sounds like Armagh had battled back to get a platform in midfield, but it's not as if they were as dominant in midfield as Kerry were in the first half. So just like... Do you know, as we've kind of said, looking back, to only score 3 points, to be in the position that they had at halftime, you know, well on top and just looking like that they might go out of sight in the second half. This one must be one of the most painful ones to look back on from Kerry. I remember that it came the year after they were beaten by Meath by 15 points in the semi-finals. So it was a serious kind of, you know, motivation amongst the Kerry team. And I'd imagine Paddy to kind of right that wrong that year, but it couldn't have gone worse for them.
No, it definitely couldn't. One thing I couldn't understand is Kieran McGeaney has a free with 1 minute to go and he's standing in midfield and he has it in his hands. It's a free. He's not being tackled. And he decides just to launch it right in there. Yeah. Watch this guy say, McGeaney, what are you bloody doing? Tap it short, hit the return, wind down the clock. He just launches it. It just shows how married to those bloody long balls are. Yeah. There was 1 minute left in an hour and final, you're a point up, and he decided to kick a 50-50 ball. Kerry won it, and luckily enough for McGeaney, Paul McGrain won it back.
That's right.
I mean, it was crazy stuff. I couldn't believe what I was watching, but it was almost funny how married to it they were. They just refused to stop getting it in there. And like, I mean, it didn't work on the day. You know, well, I suppose maybe you'll say it did work on the day. Their full forward line scored 9 points from play. So I suppose, they'll say it did work. But so many balls came back out as what they got off it.
It's like, I'd say for nearly half the game, you thought it was a great tactic, the first 10 minutes, and maybe there was a spell in the second half, I think, that maybe Stevie McDonald and Ronan Clark got a couple of scores out of it. But outside of that, it looked like a terrible tactic because Kerry had seemed to have got completely on top of it. And there was one stage where, like, while I think I mentioned the telepathy between Ronan Clark and Stephen McDonald later on, but it went wrong the odd time as well. There was one stage where the two of them were flat out after colliding into each other, and they were flat out for a good... They were flat out for a good 60 seconds. I think Seamus Moynihan might have kind of banged into one of them, but it kind of went to sum up that there wasn't, at that stage, there wasn't that much direction like in the ball kind of that was going into the Armagh full forward line. It was just like, here, just let her in there and kind of fend for yourselves. But like, how can you, are you going to disagree with it then when, as you said, that it got 9 points out of 112, I think, for Armagh, and then Ronan Clark, I think, got three from play, and Stephen McDonald might have got three or four as well.
They all got three from play. Yeah. I'll give them, yeah.
When you look at it like that, I mean, they're probably, when you look at the bare stats, you know, you're probably thinking it was a success, but it definitely doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah, definitely not. Right, talking of the full forward line, we'll come back with performance of the weekend where some of those lads feature.
Advice he gave me back then was, we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
All right, so performance of the weekend. The first one has to be Ronan Clark. 3 points, three from play, two off the right, one sensational one off the left from the 45. He nearly killed his partner, Stevie McDonald, in the second half, which was a good one. It was funny about the left-footed point. I was looking it up. He was 13 years of age when one of his 13-year-old friends told him to start practicing his left. So what a wise 13-year-old friend he had back then. Score one like that in an All-Ireland final from 45 metres out.
Very much so. He must have been doing a lot of work because he was still very young at that stage as well. So he'd packed a lot of left foot coaching into the 6 or 7 years that he'd been practicing it since his mate told him to. But I think it was a good sign. Like, it was just a joy to be looking back on Ronan Clark at his peak, because obviously Ronan Clark suffered a lot of injuries kind of later in his career. Yeah,
that was his debut year. Like, he won two All-Stars in 06 and 08. You know, like, yeah. I mean, he got riddled with injuries, but he was 19. That was his debut season, the same as Gooch.
Yeah, he looked he looked about 10 years older than Gooch did, and Gooch looked about 12 at the time. But what I suppose what I mean is that, like, that was his, he went on to win All-Stars, but he was absolutely brilliant that year as well. And because it's been so long since he has been playing, it was just great to look back and see what he was kind of capable of. And I think it was a huge kind of testament to his character as well, especially as a young fella in your debut year. So you're in your first All-Ireland final, and you're going up against Seamus Moynihan. So you've kicked a couple of points early to get the confidence up, but then Seamus Moynihan has started to get on top. And such an iconic figure as Seamus Moynihan. And then to kick that outrageous score off his left from the 45, and then to kick a score in the second half I think that was huge at the time. It was, they were like, Armagh was starting to turn the tide at that stage, and they needed to make a count on the scoreboard. And he'd like Seamus Moynihan, he turned Seamus Moynihan inside out, tried off the left, Moynihan had him, went back to the right. I think he tried a couple of times before eventually being able to curl it over on his right. So for that level of maturity and that level of quality for somebody so young in his first All-Ireland final was massive as well. And it was just so good as well to see. Now, while it was only in brief glimpses, as we said, because you know the long ball only worked at certain times, but just that telepathy between himself and Stevie McDonald, and again for somebody so young to be able to strike that up with somebody's kind of more experienced and not be kind of overawed by the kind of level of quality that you're playing with, I thought was huge. But absolutely massive game by Ronan Clark.
Yeah, it's interesting enough, there's 4 points kicked off Seamus Moynihan in that final. Like Tony McEntee got one off him when he went in full forward after he got concussed that time. It was Seamus Moynihan trying to block him down. And I always kind of think the idea of playing Seamus Moynihan full back, I never really agreed with. Now, he's centre back in 05 and he didn't play well in that final either, interestingly enough. But like Thomas Sullivan was on the bench, and like Mike McCarthy's a natural full back. You know, you put Eamon Fitzmaurice wing back then instead of Sheehan, and you know, you have a much better team. But obviously Paddy thought Seamus Moynihan, like, I didn't think he was tight enough for full back. Yeah, he's an inspirational player, but as a centre back, and you're taking probably your biggest strength in the back and you're making it a potential weakness. Do you know?
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I don't think that was a good decision. Dermot Marsden is another one. 3 from play. And interesting with Dermot Marsden, he wasn't in the game very much. He got 3 points from play. You wouldn't say he played brilliantly or got into the game all that much, but he scored incredibly important points, like the last one before half time and the first one of the second half, which were massive scores that were badly needed. He hadn't played well in the championship up to that, and he was a bit maligned that year, even though he was very talented. So you'd say he was, you know, an outstanding player as well. And Stevie McDonald, obviously, he scored 3 points from play. He got the winning score incredibly in the 61st minute, like I mentioned. And, you know, he could have had 6 from play on the day, Stevie could, you know, from different chances. Like you mentioned, a couple of the misses. But we'll get to the two kind of leaders. And even Aidan O'Rourke had a brilliant last 20 minutes. He deserves a mention as well. But McGeaney and Paul McGrain in the second half, like McGeaney, the real leader's role, 1 kickouts, 1 breaks, tied up Brosnan, blocked down O'Kaneda, you know, just got into the game. And whether this medal worked at halftime or whether, you know, saying to McGeaney, McGrain, we need you lads. Like, what are you doing? You're getting cleaned out of it in an All-Ireland final when you are the two men that drive this team on. Cop on. it's hard to know, but like, I mean, I would say potentially more than the medal, I would say a few home truths could have been told to those lads.
If anyone was brave enough to tell Kieran McGeaney,
yeah.
I suppose it's a thing, it'd be a brave man. But like, listen, Kieran McGeaney's level of self-analysis was so famous, and like he was his own harsh critic, that I'd imagine that Kieran McGeaney was having a few words with himself at halftime.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine that they're more powerful than anything that Joe Kernan would have said to him or any of his teammates would have said to him, considering his importance to the team at that stage. But that's like, in the first half, I was thinking, I think you mentioned it earlier, but I was like, where is Kieran McGeaney here? Because the full back line is getting cleaned out and he's not in front of it. Owen Brosnan is the player of the first half and could have potentially scored 2-1, and you're not marking him. And midfield is getting cleaned out, and I thought the Kerry half forward line were more prominent on breaks than the Armagh half back line. So you're thinking Kieran McGeaney is the leader here. And if you're a Kerry player at halftime, you're thinking, right, not only are we this much in front, McGrain isn't in it. You know, we've locked down Stephen McDonald and Ronan Clark now. Kieran McGeaney isn't in it. McGrain aren't in it. We have these lads. So it's just a sign of their character and sign of their importance to the team. What I'd say about McGeaney is that I thought that, like, rather than thinking all through the game or all through the second half that he's playing well, he's just responsible for some massive moments, as you said there. There's a big turnover on Owen Brosnan, and the block down, I think, on Daryl Kaneja when it came, and the reaction from the crowd was a huge moment as well. So just the reason Armagh won, I think the second half was because it turned into a battle, and what better fellas to have in a battle than Kieran McGeaney and Paul McGrain. And Paul McGrain, who turned around where Donald Daly wasn't nearly as prominent in the first half, and McGrain won what was a massive duel between, you're talking, Daryl O'Shea at that stage was Kerry's probably in such a good team, definitely Kerry's best player that year. He was captain. And then to turn around and for McGrain to turn that duel around completely. And again, yeah, like McGeady had some massive moments. They were the two standout for Armagh in that second half.
I think so. Like I said, Aidan O'Rourke had an excellent last 20 minutes. He really got on top of Liam Hassett. Oisín McConville got official man of the match. Now, I wouldn't have given it to Oisín McConville. I think he improved a lot in the second half. He obviously had the brilliant, brilliant goal that was all his own doing. And he won a free, which he scored himself. And he scored a good 45. So he did score 1-2 in the second half. But he had that bad wide off Tomás O'Shea from play, which you would have expected him to get. He missed a penalty. He missed a 45 at the end, which would have put two in it. I thought he played well. He's getting nominated for performance of the weekend, but he ain't winning it.
Well, I'd say he's probably only getting nominated for performance of the weekend, will he? Because he was actually named man of the match. So that's why we kind of have to talk about him. Like, you know, it's he was obviously influential. He scored 1-2, and he scored. We talked about how brilliant his goal was, and some of the, like, given the pressure of the situation and given the first half that he had. You know, where he missed the penalty and he kind of wasn't himself to kick some of the scores he kicked from frees and from 45s in the second half. They were a big deal. But just going back to I think we talked last week about, I don't think Michael Donnellan was awarded official man of the match for the 98 final, where he was head and shoulders above the rest. Whereas I'm not going to say that, like, Oisín McConville probably deserves to be in the conversation, but I'd have at least two, if not three, kind of players before him when it comes to man of the match. But again, when you look, the biggest turning point in the whole game was the goal, and he scored the goal and he took it brilliantly. So, like, he'll always have that to look back on.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I can't give it to McGeady or McGrain because of their first half performances, even though their second half performances were outstanding. So we're down to Stevie McDonald, Dieran Marsden, and Ronan Clark. For me, Ronan Clark, when our man needed him in the first half, he got two. In the second half, he kicked the equalising score. He's 19. He's marking Seamus Moynihan. And he doesn't give a shit that he's marking Seamus Moynihan. And he gave Seamus Moynihan all he wanted of it. He set up other scores with knockdowns. I thought, for me, Ronan Clark was the clear man of the match throughout the whole 70 minutes. So I don't care what you say. I decide the weekend and Ronan Clark is getting it. But listen, when you put all that into it, you know how he affected the game over the whole game. I thought he was the clear man of the match.
Yeah, well, you could take issue with anyone else in terms of, let's say, so McGeady wasn't in the first half. McGrain wasn't in the first half. Oisín McConville wasn't in the first half. I would think you mentioned Dieran Marsden earlier on. He was actually in it either side of half time for about 10 minutes, but outside of those, he wasn't really in it at all. Whereas if you're talking about who made a consistent impact throughout the game, you could add Stephen McDonald to this as well, because he scored the winner in the 61st minute. But consider, when you take everything into account, when you take into account that he was 19, first runner final, American Seamus Moynihan, scored the quality of his points, and probably most importantly today, Willie, he's on the show, so we'll give it to Ronan Clark.
I'm starting to give away my performance of the weekend by who gets interviewed on the show. So congratulations, Ronan Clark. Right, Connor, that's all we've time for. We'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Monday. I think we're going to do the 91 All-Ireland final. That's GAA Now have put that up on YouTube, so we'll look forward to that. Down versus Meade, where Down beat Meade after playing about 100 matches to get to the final. Meade did. So we'll do that on Monday, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.